The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, I'm a proud Missourian, and I'm happy to share with our next guest the distinction of Neanderthal, because I know Joe Biden thinks of his home state as a bunch of Neanderthals, and we Missourians, Neanderthals too. Texas, where Richard Battle, author of a brand new book, Navigating Life Journey, Common Sense in Uncommon Times, lives. Mr. Battle, welcome to the show this morning. So glad you could make time. Hi.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having us. And they're going to fill my closet up with deplorable, Neanderthal, and whatever they say next t-shirts.
It really is something. I have to say that I don't know how one looks at the results of California or where I live now, Pennsylvania, more aggressive Michigan, more aggressive lockdown states versus your Texas, or as I mentioned, my home state of Missouri or Florida. More free, independent, open states. You look at the results, they're almost identical, really, and in some cases lower, where people have been more free. I mean, it's inarguable. They keep shouting science, 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 but the fact of the matter is where people have been free to make their own decisions, they've certainly not been any worse off, the folks in free states.
Well, that is absolutely true, and what I would say is they're not following the science, they're following the politics, because the government makes one-size-fits-all decisions in whatever it is, a California state or a Texas state. They make one-size-fits-all, when in each of the states and communities there's all kinds of different results going on, and they never tell us what those results are, so that they can vary the orders based on the results and not based just on a one-size-fits-all decision.
Texas always gets this label as being, you know, but less so Florida. It's funny, Texas has always been known as its own, I mean, it's the Lone Star State, you know, and there's always been jokes or serious talk, depending on who you ask, about secession. Florida is often sort of derided and joked about as being sort of an oddball state. It has its own independent streak. But Texas made it fashionable. Texas did it first. How real is that, the independence of Texas, the secessionist talk versus, being a part of the greater United States? Is that alive and well? Is that pervasive in the state? Or what would you say about that to people?
Well, I think first we have to look at the basis. And for those that may not be familiar, Texas was a part of Mexico. It declared its independence on March 2nd, 1836, and fought a war to win its independence from Mexico. And for 9 years, Texas was its own country before it became part of the United States. And so that spirit of independence has lived on in Texans since that time. And ever since I was a little kid, Texas always talked about, we had the right to break into five states if we wanted to, and or if we wanted to secede and become a country again, we could do that because we had already done it before. And I think that talk is louder now than any time in my lifetime. And I think it's justified, because depending on what happens in the future, I want to live in a country where I'm a citizen, not a subject. I want the freedom to make my decisions and not be told by the government what I can do and can't do. And so I want to have a place available to do that and not be stuck someplace where I'm a slave to the government.
And yet there's this interesting dynamic going on where your major cities are getting increasingly more left-leaning, governed by more left-leaning policy. And we see, obviously, what's going on at the border, this extraordinary influx again of migrants. And, you know, it's pretty insulting to those of us who are across the country living behind masks and in lockdowns, while we know COVID-positive people are streaming across the border virtually unchecked. It's It's really insulting. I mean, it's just insulting to, as your book titled Common Sense in Uncommon Times, Richard Battle. It's so nonsensical and insulting to Americans everywhere to see people pouring across our border while we're virtual prisoners in some states.
Well, absolutely. And my daughter's a college softball player, and she has to get COVID tested twice a week right now. And yet the illegal aliens that are streaming across the border because they think it's open season because our current president said so, it is insulting. They're in effect invading us. They're not being tested, the ones that are coming across undetected. But in Brownsville alone, they've already documented 108 illegal aliens that were tested positive and then let loose into the state of Texas to do whatever they want with no ramifications, no quarantine, anything at all. And it is insulting, and it is almost criminal in my mind that they're doing this to us, and they're doing it wantonly, not accidentally.
Your recent battle with the cold snap, I mean, more than a cold snap, the deep freeze, and then the battle with the energy supply, that got a lot of scrutiny. I know it still is. There's actually a lot of talk about your power grid, and there were some critics on the left that said, well, see, there you go. That just shows, you know, this independent streak of Texas wanting to do it their way and on their terms. You know, well, good luck. That's what it gets you, was what I heard a lot of leftist critics say. What do you know about that?
Well, first thing I say is be careful what you ask for about beating global warming, because when we had that cold snap, it was an example of what happens when you beat global warming. And yes, we have our own electric grid. I'm glad of it. I hope we keep it because of that independence. But I also think it's better for each state or as few states as possible, because I think the best government's the one closest to the people. And we're already seeing the CEO was fired of our energy council that was responsible. They've had 6 board members resign. The legislature is all over fixing the situation because it was inexcusable in our state, because we have so many resources and capabilities to provide for ourselves. And so our inability to do so should have never happened.
Are you, and I know you're not really, you know, navigating life's journey, common sense in uncommon times. I don't really mean to make you a purely political pundit here, because I do want to get into the meat and potatoes of the book. But the Ted Cruz thing was also sort of an interesting side story out of that whole deal. His quick flight to Cancun, he drops his daughters off, he turns around, he comes back. How did that really play in Texas? I mean, I know what the media said about it. Their heads were on fire. I wonder, were Texans at large really deeply concerned? I mean, here was my thinking about it, honestly. In a power outage, my gut reaction is not, what's my United States senator doing? Or how can my United States senator help anyway? That's just not my instinct. But some people say the imagery of it needs to be that he's there and he's on the ground and he feels it right along with you or something. So how did it play, for real?
Well, and first, I like Ted Cruz, but as you say, his opposition pounced on that and will drive it every day as long as they can and win. And if he runs for reelection again, that will be on the forefront of opposition trying to get rid of him. And, of course, their first sentence was he needs to resign.
Yeah.
The people who support him are on his side of the political spectrum think it was very stupid. But to me, it illustrates the issue of how detached our politicians are, thinking they're the ruling class versus the servant class to the people. Because when you're a leader in business or any other kind of an organization, in my opinion, first thing you should do is lead by example. And the first thing you should think about as you make a decision is, how's this going to look, and what are people going to do from this, and what example am I setting? And if I'm doing it, am I okay with other people doing it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because people say that gaffe now makes, and frankly, the whole power outage throughout the state, it's just fascinating. They now say it makes Beto O'Rourke relevant again. And I think, I mean, it takes a disaster. They say, you know, the disaster, it now makes a Democrat relevant again, and Beto specifically somehow. He's palatable again, which I just think it's such a strange thing to say the misfortunes of Texans somehow makes a political figure relevant again. But whatever, I digress. I'm not going to spend much more time on that. Your book, Navigating Life's Journey, Common Sense in Uncommon Times. I suppose the title goes without saying. There doesn't feel like there's a lot of common sense. The border issue is one. I think most Americans understand that in a pandemic, it doesn't make a lot of good common sense for people to come flowing into a country, unfettered access to our country, when all the rest of us are hiding behind masks and locked down. That's just common sense, right? That's what we're lacking.
Well, absolutely. And if you talk to anyone who does not have an agenda or an ambition in politics that they will benefit from allowing this, most people will say it's crazy to do it. And some of the people that are the most upset about it are people who've come to this country through immigration, waited their turn, took the test, became citizens the legal way. And they are some of the most upset people saying, why did I go through all of this trouble when all I had to do was walk across the Rio Grande and be in the country? And so that example is bad also. And again, the politicians are making decisions based on their political benefit more so than on the benefit of the country.
The South by Southwest Conference, I don't know really what that is. I know it's in Austin. I know that the COVID situation basically axed it. It didn't happen. It's a huge event. I never really did understand what it is. Can you explain what it is? Because I know it was a massive loss financially for the state this year.
Well, yes, and a year ago yesterday was when they shut it down last year, and they canceled it this year. But people come from all over the world, and it's basically a 2 to 3 week conference about film and music. And people come, and there's performances, but they're also cutting deals for film and music-type situations. And it's where those folks gather to discuss deals and present their programs. And so it does bring a lot of dollars into the city. And if the city was concerned about it bringing COVID in, so they've canceled it. And the interesting thing to me also is some of the people who benefit the most from it are also the people who are the most fearful of COVID and are hiding, while others of us live prudent lives, still being cautious but are still able to function. These people are hiding in their holes and not doing anything until the pandemic's totally over. So there's a dichotomy there also, depending on which media people have listened to and what they believe about this pandemic.
Richard Battle's book is Navigating Life's Journey, Common Sense in Uncommon Times. I would just close by saying that I think the Hispanic vote, we often talk about that demographic, and it's certainly prevalent in Texas. I have often argued that conservatives or Republicans can and should, and I think Trump proved it was so, can make inroads and speak often to the family structure, the faith-based structure of a lot of Hispanics. I think they bring with them, oftentimes even from other countries and cultures who come into the United States, I think they bring with them sort of a core set of values and beliefs that I believe conservatives and Republicans can speak to. I think this kind of idea that the minute someone comes from south of the border, they're instantly a Democrat, I've always sort of rejected that. And again, you're not really here as a political pundit, but could you speak to that based on what you experienced in Texas?
Well, yes, and the Hispanic people are terrific people, and they're very hardworking, very family-oriented. They have great values, and I think they're a terrific contributor to our state and country. But again, it's are they here legally or illegally? And the sad thing is the ones that are coming across illegally, a lot of times they bring those values, but they're co-opted early mm-hmm. by pro-government people and with propaganda and with welfare and different things of that nature. And so unless they are embraced and brought in and shown the values of independence and free thinking and limited government and things of that type nature, they can be co-opted. And so there's a real split. Hispanics that have been here for many generations are generally more conservative than the ones that come across the border today just because of the propaganda that's being done.
Richard Battle, he's been appointed by the Texas, former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, to the Texas Judicial Council, by the way, and the Texas Emerging Technology Fund. We like Rick Perry a lot. He's been a guest of ours several times over the years, and so we know you're in good company and well thought of down there, and really appreciate your time and your new book, Navigating Life's Journey, Common Sense in Uncommon Times. Thanks for your perspective down there in the Lone Star State. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you for having me, and we say God bless America.
Amen. Look like a dance floor out there, all those toll strobes. 628, glad to be with you. That's unnerving, those pay-by-plate tolls. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Whenever we take car trips now, I forget that they snap the picture of your plate now. I always preferred to pay cash. I don't have an easy pass. And then, like a month after you've taken a trip, you get 300 bills in the mail. By the way, what must it cost? I don't know that that's a cost savings when it's all said and done. The guy that's in the booth collecting your toll versus the 3,000 sheets of paper and envelopes and the processing that goes in to processing your payment and no doubt sending it into collections. How many people never pay that, by the way?
That's a good question. Now, I remember last year, Maria Panaritis did the story on the toll hikes and
that's
and,
right.
And all that whole turnpike sector there, like how that's all done.
But I just thought to myself, the envelope processing alone,
yeah.
Just like I got four pieces of mail that I sat down with over last weekend just to pay tolls from a last trip we took like a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
That I'd completely forgotten about. And I thought, for anybody that, and I know everybody's shouting, well, just get an easy pass and you wouldn't. I don't want to get one. It's on principle. I just won't.
You'll be upset to know, Chris, I was the same way. I when they started doing toll by plate, I know you and I talked about this.
You broke.
I broke. I got an easy pass. Yeah.
But see, I don't drive. I mean, I almost never go anywhere where I need one. Almost never. I never go into Jersey. I almost never get on the turnpike. I mean, it's pretty much, with the exception of an occasional trip west a couple of times a year, and an occasional trip down the shore, or maybe the Piccadilly Inn for wings, maybe around a golf once or twice a year. I bet you I can't fill a hand with the number of times in a calendar year I go through a toll booth. Seriously.
Which is smart. And I tell anybody.
Not on purpose. I just don't.
No, you should always find a way, because what they're charging at the toll booth right now is robbery. It has gone up every single year. So I wouldn't recommend anybody go that way unless it's really that convenient.
Well, but I mean, I guess if you do every day, getting pieces of mail every day would be, you couldn't do that.
No.
That would be excruciating. Anyway, 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. So the CDC has issued guidelines for what you can do now that you're vaccinated. That came out after the show was over yesterday. I was sorry that didn't happen while we were together so that we could have enjoyed the rules yesterday. What you can do while you're vaccinated, after you're vaccinated. You'll be happy to know that if you've been fully vaccinated, you're now allowed, and this is what they kept reporting it as. If I read the word allowed one more time, I could just scream if I read or hear one more media outlet use the word allowed. That makes me furious. Do you people in media realize the country in which we live? Do you know the audience you're speaking to? This is the United States of America. Would you quit saying government agency will allow? Would you quit reporting it like that? Would you quit talking to us like that? And will my fellow Americans quit speaking to one another like that? The CDC won't allow. The CDC will allow. Quit talking about what will and won't be allowed. The CDC has no authority over your life or mine. I don't give a rat's ass what they will and won't allow. They have no jurisdiction over your life. Guidance? Fine. What they recommend? Fine. What they'll allow. All right, so yesterday they come out and they say, they'll allow you to fraternize unmasked if you've been fully vaccinated, but only with other people who have been fully vaccinated. That they feel is comfortable for them. You don't need to be socially distanced or masked if you're with others who have been fully vaccinated. But if you've been fully vaccinated and someone you're with has not been fully vaccinated, you must still continue to mask. Now, I can tell you that I have a friend who has been fully vaccinated, and his response to that was an official, go straight to hell. He has absolutely no time or interest in discussing that whatsoever. He's not entertaining that, not even a little bit. Quote from the CDC, there is still a small risk that vaccinated people could become infected with milder or asymptomatic disease and potentially even transmit the virus to others who are not vaccinated. Want that again? There is still a small risk that vaccinated people could become infected with milder or asymptomatic disease and potentially even transmit the virus to others who are not vaccinated. Small risk. Could become. Potentially. These are not words that allow for the CDC to dictate your freedom of movement, folks. Those are words that you use crossing a busy intersection. Small risk, could become potential. Those are words that you could use driving a car. Those are words you could use as a choking hazard while dining out. Small risk, could become, potentially. There's a small risk vaccinated people could become infected with milder or asymptomatic disease and potentially even transmit the virus to others who are not vaccinated. I mean, we can't live like this, and the CDC is not going to have limitless authority over my life. I don't know about you, but my friend refuses. I share his point of view.
I'm not advocating this, of course, but I don't understand up to this point when you have announcements like that, how have people not been more violent in the last few months about these lockdowns?
Admiral Girard was on with Larry Kudlow last night. I happened to see this. Girard, pretty good here. He addressed some of these guidelines.
So the CDC is providing pretty clear guidance that was really needed to clarify among people. They are loosening their guidance restrictions. As was said, if you're fully vaccinated within a household, you don't need to mask or physically distance. If you have the vulnerable people vaccinated, the unvulnerable people don't have to be vaccinated. You can still get together. Remember, if you're fully vaccinated and you're exposed, you don't need to quarantine. This is really important to keep our workforce, schools, everyone together. So I think it's cautious, but it's definitely a move in the right direction. I would have liked to see them go further on travel, but if you read between the lines, I think they're setting themselves up to loosen those restrictions within the next short period of time.
Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Girard says there he wishes that the CDC would lighten up on travel more. He would have liked the CDC to lighten up on their restrictions on travel. Now, Walensky yesterday...
Fully vaccinated people can visit with other fully vaccinated people indoors without wearing a mask or physical distancing. Visit with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk of severe COVID-19 disease indoors without wearing masks or physical distancing, and refrain from quarantine and testing following a known COVID-19 exposure if the vaccinated person remains asymptomatic. For now, we will continue to examine this in the upcoming weeks and update our guidance accordingly. Fully vaccinated people should continue to take precautions like wearing masks and physical distancing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the CDC director. Fully vaccinated people should continue to wear masks and socially distance. Now, that vaccinated people rightly assume they've been inoculated. That's what a vaccine's supposed to be. That's historically always what vaccine has meant. So when you tell vaccinated people that they're still at risk of transmission, that's not an advert. You can't simultaneously hold the same position. You're holding two positions as a public health official at once. You're telling the American public two things at the same time, and you can't hold this position that everyone should get the vaccine, but at the same time, no one is free to do anything they'd like after getting it. You can't hold both positions. Do you understand? You can't hold both positions. It's either everyone's a threat and the vaccine doesn't work, or everyone should get the vaccine so you're free to move about the country again. It can't be both. It can't be everyone should get the vaccine and everyone's still a threat. And that's what they're trying to say. And that doesn't work for me. I have no interest in even discussing the vaccine with you if your position is get the vaccine and you still must mask up and stay socially distanced. And you can't travel. That doesn't make any sense. So rightly, my friend said, I got the vaccine and you have absolutely no proof or evidence to suggest. There is no evidence to suggest that I am a danger, that I am a transmission threat. And I'm going to do what I please. I heard a fully vaccinated sports guy. Remember, the sports guys are the lefties in town. And the sports guys. Now, remember, because we are. What did they call us here in broadcasting? We are not frontline workers. What were we? We got the paperwork.
Life-sustaining.
Life-sustaining. That's right. Yeah. And this is really sort of unbelievable. I'm a life-sustaining entity here, folks. My work is considered life-sustaining. I could, if I wanted, go to the front of the line to secure this vaccine. Do you know that? I could be one of the first to get this. I've got the paperwork. I've got the job and the street cred. I'm deemed very, very important. Life-sustaining. You need me. You don't even know how much you need me. Fauci says you need me. And he doesn't even want you to need me as much as you need me. But he knows you need me. So I get it if I want it. That's how important I am to you. But I'm going to forgo it for someone else who needs it more. My point is, I could go get this. Now, my fellow panicky machismo sports talk radio hosts who are all leftists are running for it as fast as they can. Oh, God! Oh, please! Stick it in my arm! I'm so scared! Oh, 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 oh. I mean, they're over there. Those sports talk guys can't stick this in their arm fast enough. They just cannot wait. They're all over there high-fiving and talking about how excited they are that they got this vaccine. Okay, good for you, whatever. I'm not, you know, fine. Good. Go get it. You know what one of them said yesterday? You know, I think what would be really, really smart, somebody said to me the other day, you ought to take a picture of your vaccine card. Take a picture of it and have it handy so that you can prove you got it. And he went on to say, you know, I'm not mayor of the city, but if I ran things around here, you know what I'd do? That's what I'd do to insist that you got into places is prove that you got your vaccine. He was basically calling for a vaccine passport, something that we've been talking about around here. It's been bandied about since late last year. I talked about the company out of Kansas City that's working on it, the technology firms that are racing to get this thing done. Another theory that I've had about why this is dragging on and on is the technology is trying to catch up to get this vaccine passport technology created so that you can have something on your phone at the ready to prove you've been vaccinated. There was a discussion about this we didn't get to yesterday on CNN. Oh, yes, I absolutely think. But see, the thing is, there are a lot of people that have already had it, that have already gotten the vaccine fully, and all they got was their little paper card. Some people you're seeing on social media showing their paperwork. I got my vaccine. But those people, ostensibly, you know, they're not going to have the vaccine passport. They're not going to have the technology. So I don't know when it comes to, if it comes to, and I'm not going to, a lot of you believe it's coming to this. I don't know. I'm not going to worry about it till it happens. Some of you believe we're not going to be able to fly. We're not going to be able to enter concerts. We're not going to be able to enter this. We're not going to be able to go here. We're going to be able to go there until we prove we've been vaccinated. And I know that there are some who are perfectly okay with that, more than ready to show it off and think it's a brilliant idea. I hate the idea, but I heard a guy today, he was just as excited as he could be to show off. You bet, look at here. Like they want to show off their phone like as a badge. Like they would wear it on their lapel like a pin. You bet, look at me, I'm pure. I got the purity shot. Look at me, it's on my lapel. Like a ribbon, like a badge of honor. I'm clean, I got the vaccine. Need a little shirt printed. This guy was all excited. He wants to be able to prove. He said, that's a good idea. I'm going to take a picture of my vaccine card, so I'll have it at the ready, just in case anybody questions me. Well, that's not going to be enough. You think anybody's going to trust a picture on your phone of a vaccine card? Hell, I could do that. I'll take a picture of your vaccine card and show it off.
No, I think we should start chipping people's necks. That's the only way to go.
Well, remember, vaccine passports or even vaccine requirements do depend on access. It's hard to impose anything unless you are pretty sure that somebody can get a vaccine. So I think it'll be a little while before we see this, let's say, within the U.S. But there are going to be communities and areas of the country where it starts to make sense due to high availability of vaccine to say, you want to come back to work in person, got to show me a vaccine certificate, you want to go in a bar, a restaurant, got to show me a vaccine certificate. I think there will be some inequality in the U.S., but hopefully it will wash out quickly as the supplies increase very rapidly, and I think they're going to.
Now, this is Arthur Kaplan, a guy talking to Sanjay Gupta, I think, or one of those guys, medical ethicists on CNN over the weekend. And he's very, very warm and confident to the idea that, in due course, everybody here in the country, he's pretty confident we're gonna be embracing, prove you've been vaccinated to get back to work or come into a bar. Well, if that's so, how are they going to prove all these people that have already been vaccinated? I mean, tens of millions of people have already gotten theirs. Are we being chipped? Your point, have people been tagged already?
Yeah, maybe you have to download the, what is it? I call it the CCCCP app from Pennsylvania.
How are you tracked? I mean, my friend down in Florida, for instance, stick his arm out the door and he's doing it in the, you know, it's a drive through in a parking lot. How are they going to track him?
Maybe they should give barcode stickers. You have to show your barcode sticker.
Pull over for your tattoo. 610-856. It's weird to me how, I don't know, people don't walk this through very well. People's enthusiasm for this is creepy to me, right? It's an enthusiastic, like they can't wait to show it off like they've achieved something. I got it. Look, I got it. Okay, peel back. Like, stop it. This is not, you didn't achieve something. Calm down.
I was with people over the weekend. They were like proudly walking in and excited, just like, ooh, when do you get yours? Oh, I got mine. When do you get yours?
Very weird. How you want your matching sneakers and jumpsuit for the Hale-Bopp Comet, weirdo? 610-850-0990. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Girls like you run around with guys like me till sundown. When I come through, I need a girl like you, yeah, yeah. Girls like you love fun.
You remember how we were told that Joe Biden hurt his foot chasing his dog or whatever? There may be more to that story than we realize. They've apparently sent the dogs, Champ and Major, back to Wilmington because the damn dogs are biting and charging, and they're apparently wild as hell, and they can't be handled, and so they kicked them out of the White House. Security detail told the Bidens, you got to get these damn dogs out of here. So they had to take them back to Wilmington. Maybe that's why they keep making secret trips back to Wilmington, the dogs. Major, the German Shepherd, according to multiple news outlets, the three-year-old German Shepherd bit a member of the White House security team. And so they have decided to send Major and Champ, the Biden dogs, back to Wilmington.
I'm sorry.
Does that tickle you in there?
Yeah. I just think, hey, stop it.
That's probably what happened. I bet they bit Biden. I bet it wasn't he didn't trip on him. I bet they bit the hell out of the old guy.
My aunt had a dog, and it was unpredictable. And when it latched on, it was like, hey, I couldn't get it off.
What do you bet it bit the old man?
It probably did. Yes.
CNN reported the dogs were shipped home last week after what the network described as one of two sources with knowledge, a biting incident, the exact condition of the victim unknown. So Biden limping around there, claiming some weird story about how he tripped on the dog after trying to pull its tail or something. And by the way, smart German Shepherd, not for nothing.
It's a big dog to pull the tail.
Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, you don't pull a German Shepherd's tail. I have a feeling Champ was probably a MAGA Shepherd. Wouldn't you guess? 610-850-0990. Let's go to Lisa in Gibbstown. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind?
My comment is, what do you do when your employer's making it mandatory to get the vaccine?
Interesting. So this has already been suggested that you got to do it, eh?
We got a two-page memo last week. And they're offering help to get the shot if you can't get on a list. They have ways to get everyone vaccinated. So either I get the shot or I lose my job.
Yeah. Are you comfortable telling me what you do roughly? You don't have to tell me where you work, but what kind of work do you do?
I'm in the legal profession.
Okay. So you work in a law office?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess legally speaking, you would know better than me, or certainly people around you would know better than me. I guess they have every right to require you to do that to work for them. Is that a conundrum for you?
Trying to hold out to get the Johnson & Johnson shot, because at least I know that's made kind of like old vaccines. I'm going to be 59 in 2 months. So at least I know that those vaccines I was able to tolerate. But this new vaccine, you know, I have friends sending me all sorts of emails that it's got a chip in it, it's got this, and in the Bible it says you can't be chipped, and it bothers me. I just keep praying about it. God, tell me what to do.
Well, I can't give you either legal or medical advice. I wouldn't know what I'm talking about anyway. But I would wonder if you have legal recourse in terms of being able to object for medical or legal reasons. I don't know if that's true, but I would be curious about investigating it as a matter of objection, conscious objection. I would love to know, and if you find out, would you call back and let me know? All right. Well, thank you for asking. That's a quandary. I would struggle with it. I'll tell you that if that became a matter for me here.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. You live here. He lives here.
You are a role model for the rest of the media. You really do investigative reporting and informative interviews.
I absolutely love your show.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for everything you do.
Today marks 1 year since we saw the first presumed positive COVID-19 cases in Pennsylvania. It's been a hard year.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Do you know that yesterday I forgot? I'm so sorry that I forgot to mark a very important milestone yesterday. Yesterday marked 1 year since Dr. Fauci told Dr. LaPook on 60 Minutes, you don't need a mask. No, masks are not necessary. I wouldn't say that people need to be wearing masks. Masks are not. No, it would be too much to say that people need to start wearing masks. They're not effective and they're not useful. And no, it's not. Masks are not. No. 1 year ago yesterday, Dr. Fauci, the world's foremost authority, said masks were not prudent, not even useful or helpful. Sorry, I missed that anniversary date. 1 year later, he said, why not two? You should really wear two. And I'm not even comfortable saying when we should stop wearing two. Maybe into 2022, 2023. It's who am I to say? Indeed. Who are you to say? You went from don't wear them to let's wear two indefinitely in a calendar year. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Let's head out to Lancaster County. How are things going out there? I happen to know pretty well. I neighbor Lancaster County. I spend a fair amount of time out there. And you know why? Because they operate like sane, free people out there. You go out to Lancaster County and you'll see a community of people, a county of people who, I mean, it's like a different planet. The further west you go, you start to see, oh, they've figured out how to function at a pretty high level. And by the way, even with, you know, a pretty fair amount of COVID, they still figured out how to do it, and they're doing it well. One of the commissioners out there, we've talked with him frequently throughout this, is Josh Parsons, and he joins us now. Commissioner, good morning.
Hey, Chris. Good to be back with you and Eddie. We do still believe in freedom in Lancaster County, and we welcome you out there anytime.
The governor is coming to visit soon, I understand.
Yeah, and, you know, whatever the issue, as you know, whether it's lockdowns, nursing homes, unemployment system, business waivers, and now the vaccine rollout, it has been one disaster after another. And, you know, we've tried to have a middle course in Lancaster County where we address the vaccine and the virus, or the virus and the economy, and the governor and this administration has not been collaborative, has not worked with us at all on that.
What's the visit? Why is he coming out?
Well, hard to say exactly, but we, you know, as you know, there's been great frustration with the vaccine rollout, the fact that, you know, you have older people in their 80s who have to try to sign up on multiple different systems to get the vaccine if they want it. And our community has come together with all four health systems, county government, to create one system, one center for vaccinations. And I think it's going to be helpful for people. It's what the state has not provided with their rollout. And apparently he's going to come down and visit this.
Josh, I'll just say that I have been, my wife and I over the last weeks have been, you know, we're Chester County residents, we're neighbors. And my school district, my community, has largely been locked down throughout all this with no real urgency about getting back online, to great frustration for us. And we got to a point where we just said, okay, well, perhaps if they're not going to get back online anytime soon, we need to start exploring. And that included everything from schools to houses of worship. And so we made our way west. And, I mean, we've gone north to Berks. We've gone west to Lancaster. And what's remarkable in both counties, I mean, you it's like I just can't get past how capable, how functioning. I mean, COVID is still a thing. It's real. Everyone's aware it's real. It's hit your county. People are mindful of it. Nobody's disrespectful of what it is. People know that it has made people sick. But there's not a terror. There's not a dysfunction. Your schools are still open. Your churches are open. And in many cases, you know, in some places where masks are required, fine. In some places, masks are encouraged but not required, fine. In some places, people say masks optional, fine. But it's like, it's this beautiful harmony of adults being adults. And I can't say enough about your county. And at no point do I read government says you must. And I don't encounter people saying, oh, the commissioners say we have to, or the school district says we have to. There's just none of that. It's just a county away from Chester.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, we have tried to chart a middle course where we still believe in freedom, but, you know, we take the virus seriously. And, you know, I'm chair of the Republican Caucus County Commissioners. I think Republican commissioners across Pennsylvania have tried to take that course. You know, we understand that people want to live in freedom. They also want an effective, efficient government. Governor Wolf and the administration have done the opposite. We've tried to push back against that, but it's been very difficult because there's been very little collaboration. You know, you have a governor who's exercising more power than any in the history of Pennsylvania, and really with very little oversight, either from the press, who has largely gone along with them, or the legislature hasn't been able to effectively conduct oversight. They're trying to with this constitutional amendment that's going to be on the ballot in May, but it's been a difficult year for everyone.
And here's what's happening. This, and you can confirm whether this is true or not, but anecdotally, I think I'm observing what's happening. I think you're finding that people are moving out of this five-county southeastern Pennsylvania metro area. I think they're fleeing to Lancaster County and Berks County. I do. And the reason I think that's happening is because you try to find real estate out in your county, available for sale real estate, and as soon as it hits the market, bang, it's gone. People are snapping up property in Lancaster County, available properties that are, you know, eastern Lancaster County. I mean, closer, you know, inland, if you will, to Philadelphia, drivable, if you will, even though you're still talking about an hour or more. I think people are moving the hell west where they can live freely and still make a legitimate commute into town. I know that that is true in my own life, and that's what I think is happening. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. The real estate market is very, very hot, especially on that end of the county, but everywhere. And, you know, I think you are seeing people move in. We hope that when they move, they remember, you know, why they came here.
Right. Don't change it, right? Yeah, don't bring right. the culture with them. Yeah. No, but that's a key. That's a critical thing, right? Don't bring your Montgomery County, Chester County, Bucks County politics with you.
Well, we still have a conservative county. We're the largest Republican-controlled county in the Commonwealth at this point, and we're working hard to keep it that way because we're responsive to our people, and they want effective, efficient government, and that's what we've tried to provide without being, while still recognizing that they're free people. They are American citizens, and we've just never seen government try to exercise the amount of control that we've seen over the last year. And, you know, frankly, it should concern everyone, regardless of your political affiliation.
What is the status of vaccine distribution in Lancaster County? Are you do you feel like you have a calendar date targeted that you feel like most of the citizens in your county should have access to a vaccine if they want it by a certain date?
Well, the rollout's been very, very frustrating to people, especially older people. I think from a big picture perspective, Trump's Operation Warp Speed has been amazing. The fact that a year ago there was nothing even considered, and now we have multiple effective vaccines for those who want it. But the rollout in Pennsylvania, the way it works is that the vaccines come from the federal government to state government. The State Department of Health has absolute control over how they distribute them. And the way they've done that is a very fragmented manner, so people have to try to sign up on multiple lists. So we've tried to fix that with one center, all four health systems collaborating, working together. But we need the State Department of Health to allocate the vaccines to that. Without that, it doesn't work. So that is still somewhat up in the air.
Yeah, and the health department in Harrisburg basically communicates to you, here's how much you're going to get and when you're going to get it?
That's true for all vaccinators across Pennsylvania, but, you know, there seems to be no rhyme or reason to it. There's a lot of frustration even among, you know, I've seen some down, you know, more towards Philly. Even Democrats are frustrated. It's like the secret distribution formula. I don't know if it's the Manhattan Project or what, but no one seems to understand it.
Yeah, we just read a story yesterday. I mean, it was in the Daily News here in Philadelphia that the surrounding, the five counties here in our immediate area, they can't figure it out. Democrats and Republicans alike can't figure out why they're getting such short shrift. Well, Philadelphia specifically gets its direct supply from the federal government, but the surrounding counties, they can't figure it out either. Yeah,
right. And that goes back to the collaboration. There has been no collaboration. You know, this governor from the beginning has only talked to his inner circle, has not talked to the legislature or to counties. And that's put us at, you know, a huge disadvantage.
Well, Josh, I'm sorry for the struggle out there. I know the citizens of Lancaster County, like everybody, they want to, you know, get the vaccine and move on. But to your credit, like I say, do you feel there's a panic or an urgency? Everybody wants the vaccine that wants it because they don't want to be afraid that they're going to get sick. I get it. But on balance, I would not describe your community as a panicky one, to your credit. And I think that's just due to adulting and leadership out there.
Well, I think that's right. And our citizens, you know, largely have tried to go about their business and continue to work and do their business throughout this. And, you know, we want to have this all behind us. I think that we can have this behind us. The numbers are really just coming down, you know, like crazy. We have very few people at this point in the hospital. We had experienced a surge a couple months ago. Very few people in the hospital. Between everyone who's had COVID and recovered and those who've gotten vaccinated, I think we're going to be in a very good place here shortly. But we need, you know, we need some cooperation from the governor, state, and the state government to get this all behind us.
Just briefly, only because I'm curious, and they're human beings, so there's obviously not a literal biological difference, but I'm curious, as a community, are they treating or addressing differently, they being the Amish or the Mennonite community, are they treating the issue of COVID differently? Do they view it differently, or are they seeking treatment for it differently, therapeutics, vaccines, medical consultation? Is there any kind of difference in the way they're either seeking assistance or help or outreach there or not?
Well, the Plain community, the Amish, you know, largely don't get too excited about anything. And I would say, I mean, that's the case with this, too. They certainly go to the doctor like everyone else if they get sick. But, you know, they've just tried to live their life and continue to farm and do their business throughout this. Has it impacted them? Yeah, it has, just like every other community, but they don't get overly excited about anything like this.
I don't know, from a faith perspective, are vaccines part of their culture or not?
I think it depends. There's lots of different segments to the Plain community, so I think each one will sort of make a decision for themselves. And, you know, that's still America. I know some people want to force everyone to get the vaccine, but
right.
You know, we believe it's America, and you can make that decision for yourself. If you want it, we want to make sure it's available to you.
Of course. That was just an interesting point of interest to me as I was actually driving through on Sunday and looking around. I began to think about them and just kind of wondered, as with always, you know, watching cable news 24/7, I know they're not. So I'm often, like, sometimes I always want to pull over on a Sunday and visit one of their services and go, what are you guys talking about in here? Because I know it's not the obnoxious stuff we're talking about. Josh, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it out there in Lancaster County.
Thank you. Always good to be with you.
That's the one of the commissioners in Lancaster County, Josh Parsons, at 716. God's country out there, folks. I tell you. You just don't know how quickly my wife and I have flirted with the idea of going full Green Acres. I mean, I'm Eddie Albert with a pitchfork. It's this close, Fast Eddie, this close.
I don't blame you.
I just can't. 610-850-0990. If it weren't for the kids, and even so with the kids, it's getting really tempting. They're sane out there. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. This world keeps spinning and
each new day. I can feel a change in everything.
Well, 7:22 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. It is remarkable to me the number of people who are either pretending to be, well, I shouldn't say it's remarkable to me. It's understandable to me, actually. The number of people who are invested in this Meghan Markle, Harry, Prince Harry story, this interview with Oprah from Sunday. I talked a little about it on the podcast yesterday. And I didn't really address it here, except for maybe a couple of minutes at the tail end of the show yesterday. It's abundantly clear what it was. It's obvious what the whole thing was about. It was only about one thing. It is what everything's about anymore. Race. The whole thing was only about race. The whole thing was meant to be about race. It's what everybody who has any tiny scintilla of dark pigment in their bloodline will now try to leverage as some sort of victimhood class and status for monetary gain, that they are put upon, that they're a victim, that they're a victim of oppression and racism. Meghan Markle and now her husband, the Prince, are trying to leverage victim status. It's very chic. She's trying to be the Duchess of BLM. There's more money and fame and power in being a put-upon victim of racism today, see Colin Kaepernick for more, than there is in being a royal. That's all you have to understand. That's all Sunday was, all that interview was a royal version of Colin Kaepernick. These are people that haven't accomplished anything. Nobody's interested in them. Their best days of productivity are gone if they were ever here. She's a washed-up has-been actress. He's royalty. They're not particularly interesting, talented people. So what have they got? Racism. That's your calling card. And if you can play that card, you play it. That's how you get rich in this country. That's how grievance politics makes you rich. And so they decided to play the card. And there ain't nobody who can cash in your chips quite like Oprah can when it comes to playing that card. So that's all that was. I mean, it doesn't really need any more analysis than that. And then, of course, people like Don Lemon will do their level best to be helpful.
Well, imagine your kids, Brianna. I mean, you know, people love their kids and they want to protect them. And, you know, for someone to treat the kid differently or to be concerned about how dark the child's skin tone is going to be, well, again, which is something that I do write about in the book, and I talk to you about it all the time. Now, listen, we shouldn't be surprised that you have a black woman from America who is, you know, in their eyes, a commoner, and then you have this white, redhead, British royal. People wanted to know what the baby was going to look like. That was out of curiosity. But what mattered was your reaction. If you said, oh, this baby's going to be a beautiful brown baby with red hair, I can't wait to see it, that's a different reaction than, oh, my dear, what color is his skin? Is he going to be too dark? Two different things. So I think the difference is the reaction here. So I thought it was a fantastic interview. I thought it was eye-opening. I think that there was initially people thought that maybe Meghan and Harry didn't, that they should have waited it out longer. They should have.
First of all, of course, Don Lemon thought it was eye-opening and an interesting interview because it didn't tell us anything. Of course, Don Lemon thought it was a fantastic interview. It was actually a horrible interview. Oprah Winfrey actually did a horrible interview. If you want to know the truth of the matter, it was an awful interview. And you want to know why? Because it was totally devoid of substance. Look, I love The Crown. Full disclosure, I watch not the literal Crown in the sense of the show on Netflix, The Crown. which has won many, many awards. It's an extraordinarily well-done show. My wife and I love it. I don't know, 4 or 5 seasons now. I absolutely love the Netflix show. So it's just a well-done, what do they call it, historical fiction. It's interesting. The Gillian Anderson, Margaret Thatcher characterization in this last season, she's spectacular. She does a tremendous Margaret Thatcher, and they actually do make Margaret, I mean, you know, obviously there's always liberties with every storyline, but they make the Queen and Margaret Thatcher out to be pretty on balance. For a Netflix show, I think they're pretty historically accurate. And Churchill, by the way, John Lithgow plays Churchill in the first season, first and second season. And I think the Churchill portrayal, the Thatcher portrayal, and this Queen portrayal, for the most part, all of them are primarily portrayed as conservative and traditional institutionalists. And I think, on balance, it's pretty fair. Now, I mean, sure, it takes its shots, and sure, there are moments where it makes them look detached or cold or whatever. But, you know, you expect that. My point is, yeah, I have watched this show because I'm interested in it. And the show, as a historical fiction, you take a look into the window of the lives of the royals. And in the drama of their lives, there's always, since the queen's father, before she became queen and he died, which if you've ever seen the movie The King's Speech from back in the 90s, it's a fascinating thing. He had a terrible stutter. He wasn't supposed to be king. His brother was king. His brother abdicated the throne because, and I swear to you, you can almost imagine, and I almost guarantee that Harry and Meghan watched The Crown. Because if you watch The Crown, Harry and Meghan are living out and acting out the lives of the way The Crown is portrayed. The Queen Elizabeth's father was king because his brother abdicated the throne. He was running around with and ultimately married a divorced American woman. That was considered very scandalous. And he ultimately ended up loving her too much. And he wanted to trip the light fantastic with this divorced American woman. He just loved her so much. And the trappings of the crown were just too much. And so he had to live it. He just loved her too much. And so he fled to the United States. And he lived this remarkable, wonderful playboy life. And so his poor brother, who had this awful stutter, ends up having to be king. and it really kind of sucked. And so Queen Elizabeth is queen today, mostly because her uncle couldn't keep it in his pants. That's really the way the whole show portrays it, is Queen Elizabeth is queen today because her uncle was just so horned up for the American chick that he couldn't. And similarly, Queen Elizabeth's sister, Margaret, is this, she'll never amount to anything, she'll never be queen, and so she's just tortured, and she's always in drama, always a drama, she's always men, and there's always this drama. So in every generation of the royal family, there's this black sheep in the family who's just tortured and always in drama and running off and causing, you know, deficits, a love interest, and... Well, it's like, I swear to you, Harry and Meghan were like, ooh, it's our turn. Let's do that. Let's be the sexy black sheep outcast. I swear to you they watched The Crown. I guarantee you they've watched every episode and said, oh, let's be that. Only let's throw racism in this time. We'll do that, only we'll throw black in. That'll be our hook. Like, that's their deal. So they're basically, they drop this bomb that these people are racists. Now, if you know anything about this show and these people, they may be a lot of things. I don't know anything about them, and I don't care about them. I'm not emotionally invested in them. But just as a human matter, as a family matter, I want you to imagine a member of your family going public and saying, you know, my entire family, they have a problem with me marrying a mixed race person, and they started asking me questions about what my baby would look like. I'm not going to tell you who said it, but they all have a problem with it. I mean, like that's a pretty big bomb to drop on your family, right? How pissed would you be if that's a member of your I just want you to imagine that's your family. A member of your family says aloud, they basically implicate your entire family in having a problem with you marrying someone mixed race and having kind of open discussions with you about. Now, Prince Charles is an absolute left-wing weenie. For instance, we know he hated Donald Trump. He hated Donald Trump, Prince Charles. He's one of these green wackadoos. He's an Al Gore-loving green lunatic. He's a leftist. He's not a bigot. He's not a racist. I guarantee he's not. But we're left with the impression that they just could not handle Meghan Markle's. I mean, it's not like she's Angela Davis or something, Meghan Markle. They make her like she's Florida from Good Times, for God's sakes. she's Meghan. I mean, what?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know who Meghan Markle was.
I didn't either.
4 years ago. And if you'd asked me what's her ethnicity, I wouldn't have said black anyway. I don't know what, I wouldn't have said black. Like Puerto Rican or something, I would not have said she was an African-American woman. So the whole thing is just silly. But I tell you something, this just smacked, the second you heard it, the second you read it, it just smacked of, okay, well, these uninteresting, unaccomplished people are trying to go the Colin Kaepernick cash-in route. That's clearly what they're doing. And again, I have no interest in the royal family in terms of defending them or their character. I don't, it's not a matter of that. It's just, it's so transparent and so unseemly and gross. You know, you have just the darkest pigment of skin in your bloodline, and that's now your calling card to cash in and try to play victim. And I gotta say, if you're somebody who's actually suffered real racism in this country, I just can't imagine how insulting it must be. It must be to women like those women who make up stories of being raped, and then women who have actually been sexually assaulted. I just can't imagine how insulting it must be. Last time. Get to this yesterday, but I had two different stories from over the weekend. One in Maricopa County, Arizona. Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County have blocked and delayed independent audits performed by the Arizona Senate of the county results of the 2020 presidential election. And now they have found shredded in a dumpster days before set to begin auditing these shredded ballots. Not that that surprises me in the least. Meanwhile, over in Georgia, 4 months after the 2020 presidential election, this from the Georgia Star News, in Georgia, no chain of custody documents produced for 404,000 absentee ballots deposited in drop boxes. Fulton County, one of 35 scofflaw counties. 4 months after the November 3rd presidential election, state and county officials in Georgia have failed to produce chain of custody documents for 404,000 vote-by-mail absentee ballots deposited in drop boxes and subsequently delivered to county registrars for counting. Chain of custody has always been the issue here. It's always been the issue. It's been the issue in Pennsylvania. It's been the issue in Arizona. It's been the issue in Nevada. It's been the issue in Georgia. I believe it's the issue in Wisconsin and Michigan as well. Well, Monday in Wisconsin, yet another no-go from the Supreme Court. And here to discuss it from the Landmark Legal Foundation is Michael O'Neill. Mr. O'Neill, glad you could make time for us this morning. Hi.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate being on. What you've seen here is you see we have three... A number of events have occurred on the national stage. You pointed out a couple of events that occurred in Arizona, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. And what you've seen here is you've seen really three things out of the United States Supreme Court in the past couple of weeks that have kind of thrust this issue of voting integrity back into the national spotlight. And then with the actions of the Supreme Court, you have that on one side. Then on the other side, you have what Congress is doing with the enactment of, which is trying to attempt to pass H.R. 1, which I'll get to in a second. But what's important to note here is that three things have occurred at the Supreme Court. First, as you indicated a couple weeks ago, the court denied the petition for certiorari, denied the ability to hear the case arising out of Pennsylvania, which is the case where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court contradicted the actions of the Pennsylvania legislature and extended the receipt of mail votes to 3 days after the election that occurred in November. And there was a very solid case that was up that was brought before the court in the fall. Justice Alito actually commented on it and said he would have taken the case, but not enough justices. It split 4-4, and the case was not heard on an expedited process last year. Well, the case came back up again, and there was an opportunity to hear the case, and the court denied certiorari, hearing the full case on its merits. This is the Pennsylvania case I'm talking about here. There was a robust dissent that was filed by Justice Thomas. This was an important case because essentially what it said was it gave the court a broad timeline. They wouldn't have to hear it with the pressures of an election pending, about whether the ability of a Supreme Court, or whether it's constitutional for a Supreme Court to overrule a state legislature, the state legislature of Pennsylvania, with a duly enacted law. So you had that case. Next, you had a case that is arising out of Arizona, interestingly enough, separate from the Maricopa stuff you were just talking about, which is known as Brnovich versus Democrat National Committee. Now, this is a case which is distinguishable from those cases from last year because it's a fully briefed, fully argued, fully merit-based case that has percolated up through the court section, the various courts, the district court, the court of appeals, the Supreme Court, had a full trial. And this case involves two policies in Arizona, what is known as a prohibition on ballot harvesting and an out-of-precinct policy, which requires that people who vote in person vote in a designated precinct. Now, the court, interestingly, did hear that case and is going to rule on that case. And the issue there is the extent to which states can enact reasonable protections in their voting on their voting laws and whether those reasonable protections violate the Voting Rights Act. Finally, what do we have here? We have what occurred just yesterday, where the Supreme Court denied certiorari, the case arising out of Wisconsin. And again, that is a post-election case. So what conclusion can we draw from all these actions from the Supreme Court if we're trying to look at it and trying to tie this all into kind of an analysis from 30,000 feet? Well, what we can see is that the court, and we pretty much saw this also in the fall, is that the highest court in the land and the district courts or lower courts are not going to get involved, or are loath, extremely reluctant to get involved in these post-election challenges. Once an election has occurred, judges are going to feel the political pressure and are not going to want to get involved and are going to look for an exit ramp at any opportunity they can. And this is despite the fact that you pointed out that there's going to be that plaintiffs and parties are going to bring evidence saying, well, look, there's this evidence, there's this evidence, there's this evidence. Courts are going to be extremely reluctant to get into post-election challenges. They don't want to be accused of overturning the outcome of an election or disenfranchising voters from the mainstream media or from the left. And even if this is in the face of extreme malfeasance, they're still going to look for an exit ramp at any opportunity they can. So what do we have to do? We have to say, look, states have to have strong voting protections in place before the election. They have to have strong election officials who are willing to enforce those laws and ensure those laws are carried out. And we have to fight efforts at the national level for the left to federalize the election. And that is the enactment of what I'm talking about, which is H.R. 1, which is going to be an omnibus federal law that will essentially remove any authority of the states to conduct elections and remove any reasonable voting protections that states utilize to ensure the integrity of the vote.
Michael O'Neill is with the Landmark Legal Foundation, very cogently summed it all up. The chain of custody issue is the most important issue, it seems to me, because that is the ball game issue. We can discuss voting machines, and I think there are a lot of problems with it. And we can discuss a whole lot of potential fraud, and I think there was. But really, at its root, if we don't discuss chain of custody, one person, one vote, signature verification, people counting it and supervising it, and where they go and who's handling them, that's what matters most. And that's what was so missing in this last election. And no matter what we can or can't prove, Democrats can't argue it. Republicans can't prove it, unfortunately, but Democrats can't disprove it. The hundreds of thousands, millions of ballots in multiple states were mishandled and not properly supervised and have gone missing or were shredded. And that is what leaves the veil of suspicion at a minimum over this last election forever. And that's what we can't have happen again.
Well, and what we saw last year was in states that had traditionally states have voted, have in-person voting. You know, absentee voting, mail-in voting is a small percentage of votes in the overwhelming majority of states. And what we saw in 2020 is a lot of those states had to rapidly ramp up the vote-by-mail process. And we know what vote-by-mail is inherently risky, as you just say. It's very, very difficult to substantiate chain of custody in vote-by-mail ballots. It is open to all kinds of malfeasance. People can engage in ballot harvesting. People can intimidate people who are voting by mail. They can collect ballots. They can take ballots out of mailboxes that are unsecured. And so vote by mail it needs to be strictly regulated if it occurs. Ideally, voting in person on election day is the best way to ensure the integrity of the vote.
And that's what they don't want. And Michael, that's what they don't want. Let's be honest. If Democrats had their way, the idea of you and I showing up at a precinct on election day is what they would. I think they'd like to eliminate. I think they don't want a polling place on election day. Sincerely.
Exactly. Well, and that's all encapsulated in H.R. 1, which will, and this is the bill that recently passed the United States House of Representatives and is currently before the Senate. And it's going to be a fight for whether this bill passes. Now, H.R. 1, again, will federalize the election process and will essentially make vote-by-mail universal. And it will remove any ability of a state to regulate vote-by-mail or to ensure the integrity of the vote-by-mail process. It removes prohibitions. It removes prohibitions on ballot harvesting. It removes witness verification. All of those things which you're talking about, which are necessary to ensure chain of custody and ensure the integrity of the vote, are removed. And this is at the federal level. And this would remove this would trample the authority of the states to regulate the time, place, and manner of their elections, and to do what's right for their own particular state. And it will be run out of Washington. It will be run out of, I would assume, and I don't think the details have been worked out, but a division of the Department of Homeland Security and Elections Division. And it will be run by bureaucrats in Washington. And it would essentially federalize the electoral process.
Yeah. There's just nothing more important. I mean, here in Pennsylvania, you know, unfortunately, we've got a Democrat governor. So, you know, to the extent that the Republican legislature can do something about it, they're looking at it. But, you know, you really need a new governor to sign off on it. But, Michael, we'll continue to watch it. I know the Landmark Legal Foundation will continue to watch it. Thanks for your assessment of it today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Chris. You have a nice day.
By the way, the sister of Meghan Markle is out there doing interviews, saying she feels this was exactly I said this yesterday on the podcast. Oh, by the way, also on the podcast yesterday, and I should have had this for you this morning, and I didn't. You'll have to go listen. Senator Pat Toomey ended up popping up live while I happened to be recording the podcast after the show yesterday. He popped up on with Bill and Dana on Fox News. Bill Hemmer, Dana Lash, Dana Perino. And he was very, very upset. Very, very angry. And he wanted people to know, I'm mad. I'm very mad. I'm very upset. I'm angry about the $1.9 trillion stimulus. I'm mad. I sure am. Mad as hops. My buttons are about to pop. I'm so doggone mad. He was in his leather chair, and he was angry about it. And his books, his books were askew. He was so angry, the books behind him. And he, by golly, he wanted to tell Bill and Dana all about it, how angry he was. And so I gypped it on the podcast, and I said, that's the only time you're going to hear Pat Toomey on the show going forward is in a capacity like that. You won't hear him here anymore. I have no interest in talking to him. So you'll have to go elsewhere if you want to hear from him. I have no time to hear from him anymore. I don't want to listen to him anymore. I mean, you know, as he makes appearances, he's clearly, here's what he's doing. He's running around shopping. His press team is running around asking to go on shows to tell everybody how upset he is about all the spending. He's now trying to reestablish himself as Mr. Conservative. And yesterday on Fox News, he was telling everybody, why, I'm mad because in this bill, why, there's a bunch of handouts to people based on race. And that's not constitutional. Why, I don't think it's constitutional at all. There are many, many violations of the Constitution in here. Oh, I see. So Senator Toomey is all wound up about the Constitution now, is he? Good to see you, Mr. Constitution. Thrilled to hear from you, Mr. Constitution. You're a fierce defender of the Constitution now, are you? It's funny because when I brought up the Constitution to you in regards to the election, you said that the election was won fair and square by Joe Biden, that Pennsylvanians had spoken, that the nation had spoken, that it wasn't even close. Biden ran away with it, that it was clear as day and anyone could see it. Trump was just not as popular. Biden was much more popular. You were convinced of it. It was inarguable. You're just trying to get me to say that Donald Trump really won and that Biden didn't win, Chris. I know what you're trying to get me to say. No, that's not what I'm trying to get you to say, Senator. What I'm trying to say is there were constitutional violations to the way the election was conducted in states like ours and others. I'm asking you to have an issue with the chain of custody of ballots in states like ours and others. Well, I know court has sided with you, Chris. I don't have a... And then he votes to impeach the one guy that would stand in the way of all the things he's screaming about the Constitution.
This is
Spare
WNPP,
me.
Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. A Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. You live here. He lives here.
I'm so happy you're back on the air, and I wanted to let you know, love the podcast.
Hey, good morning, Chris. Welcome back, and thank you for all your information.
Did I tell you I am so happy to have you back on air in Philadelphia? Awesome.
I just want to thank you both, and I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Not a bit, folks, not a drill. It's the real President Asterisk. Want to thank the guy that runs the outfit over there. You mean the Secretary of Defense who runs the Pentagon? Right, the... Want to thank the fella who runs the deal. The gent who runs the Wedgemahoojit over there. Want to thank the lad who runs the who's it? That fella who operates the Hooskow. It's the Secretary of Defense. He runs the Pentagon, sir. You're the President of the United... Pudding. The dog bit me.
Who appointed him?
Not a joke. That's supposedly the President of the United States. Telephone number, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. I'm sorry, I got distracted with Toomey, and I didn't finish my thought on Meghan Markle's sister. What you also would have heard yesterday on the podcast, if you were listening, and I hope you do, it's a stellar one each and every day at chrisstegall.com. Meghan Markle's sister is a woman named Samantha, and I said this. Every family, I think every family has a Meghan Markle. I'm pretty convinced everyone does. Well, I'll speak for my own family. My family has a Meghan Markle. And I know that most families have some version of a Meghan Markle, maybe not as radical. My family actually literally has a Meghan Markle, quite literally this bad. Meaning a woman who it's gotten this bad. She infiltrates the family. I'm divulging a lot, but this person is way out of town and like out of our life. So this is like deep family secret. Are you ready for this? So she, this is a guy. How much do I want to be careful here? So this is a relative, very close with the family. We were all close, all of us, like grandparents, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, dad, parent, all of us close. No consternation. He has children. We're all close. Everybody's close. There's no infighting, none. Okay, he ends up divorcing a woman in the family with whom they have children who are in the family, obviously. He ends up remarrying a new woman who's much younger than him. And over a series of 3 or 4 years, she manages to completely transform him into a human being none of us know. I mean, he is he's a certifiable loon. Like, don't know him. And I don't know if this has happened to you in your own family, but I've heard of these stories before, and I've now witnessed it. These people have this psychological ability, and it generally happens to men because men are stupid. Women are typically the ones who are able to pull this. I'm not saying it's only women who do it. Often men are psychologically manipulative, sometimes abusive, but women are typically more effective at this because they're more subtle. Women can do this more subtly because they have sex that they offer to the men. Men are motivated by sex. And if you're attractive to the man and the man wants sex, and if you're younger, maybe you're a little hotter, you're a little more exciting, dumb guys get even dumber when they're getting a little action. And dumb guys who are getting dumber because they're getting action, they'll start doing anything the woman asks them to do so that they can keep getting the action from the hot girl. Right? That's kind of historically true. Yeah. That's just biological.
Mm-hmm.
Men who are psychologically subversive, that's typically more abusive. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but that normally takes a little longer. It can happen a lot faster with women. All it takes, you know, is a couple of nights with a fella, and guys are like, oh, whatever you want, honey. And so, this guy in our family, in short order, and I'm not kidding, before it's all said and done, his siblings, his parents, his own children, biological children, cut off, gone. He moves out of state. He starts a new family with this woman. We're all dead. We're dead to him. And not only are we all dead to him, but we've all become enemies. I mean, we're all bad people. And he says so.
Sheesh.
All of us. It's not just one or two of us. It's everybody, including his own children from his first marriage.
They need to go on Oprah.
But this is the power of people like these women. They have this uncanny ability, and I can only, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's probably, I mean, whatever the psychology of it is, who knows what it is. And I can see it in this Prince Harry. He got himself some babe actress, he thinks, and he's like, hey, you know, sure, whatever you want, honey. And so she's convinced him, your family's racist. Let's move to California. Okay, whatever you want, honey. And let's sit down with Oprah and tell everybody your family's racist. Well, okay. Bing, bang, boom. That's how it happens. It's that fast. It's that easy. And I have no feelings or sentiment about the royal family. I don't care. Other than I'm sure those people were like, what in the world? Like, we're messed up. We're not a particularly loving bunch. I'll grant you. They're probably thinking to themselves, but this is a bit much. And apparently most of the UK, their approval, that Reuters Ipsos has a poll out this morning. The Queen, her favorability is going through the roof. Harry and Meghan just tanking. They hate them over there. The public approval ratings on these people is just plummeting. Well, anyway, the sister of Meghan Markle comes out, and she says exactly what I thought was true. I talked about this yesterday in my podcast. Samantha Markle, estranged half-sister, fires back. I see narcissistic personality disorder. I'm not diagnosing her. She needs a counselor. I feel sorry for Harry, says her sister. She pulled him away from his family, all of his friends, the life that he knew. He reminds me of one of those kidnap victims who eventually starts to believe that their life is so horrible and they become in love with their captor.
Stockholm syndrome.
It's exactly what I said yesterday. It's what happened to this relative I'm describing. This happens. It's a real thing. And it's all because of sex. It's nothing more than that. And you think to yourself, the guy's a prince. He can have anybody he wants. I don't know. I'm just telling you, I bet there's stuff she does. And I don't know what it is. Whatever voodoo she does behind closed doors was enough to get him roped in. She closed the sale. He bought. By the way, I bet he probably doesn't lay a finger on her now. She got the job done. The sale's done. Now the damage is done. That's it. They probably sleep in separate rooms now for the rest of his miserable life. But it doesn't matter. She's got the kid. The damage is done. They've lit the bridge on fire. There's no going back. That's the other miserable part of this story, is once you've got him, there's no going back. Now you've ruined it all, right? And he's cut off. Like, that's the other thing. He is completely cut off financially now from that family. No more royal money. Dad doesn't take the calls, he said in the interview. Like, done. Boy, I hope she still keeps putting out Harry. I hope it was worth it. I have a funny feeling she won't. I'll bet you they wind up divorced in the next year.
Next 3 years, I'll say.
And he's not going back.
No.
It's not like they're not going to welcome him back with open arms. And his brother, by the way, his brother's going to be king.
Right.
What a dope. What a dope. You can have, you're a prince. You can have any woman in the world, and you marry her. Hey, I got an idea. Let's call your entire family racist, cut ourselves off from all the royal money, and move to Southern California and play race-hustling victims.
Well, sure, honey, if that's what you want.
Man, guys are dumb. We can be dumb. Telephone number 610-850-0990. Quick break here. Back with Steve Moore in a minute on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. Yesterday, Kudlow on Fox Business. He's got a great show, by the way. I have found myself gravitating to it already. His brand new Fox Business show, friend of our pal Steve Moore. He had Admiral Girard on the show to talk about Operation Warp Speed. They're just relitigating this a little bit, and I think it's important they do so.
Brett, before we get to the CDC, I can't help myself. You know what's coming. At a White House press briefing a couple days ago, a reporter asked Jen Psaki, she said, aren't the Biden people following the Trump playbook? Psaki then says, well, no one deserves credit because 500,000 fatalities occurred. And then she said, the reporter said, well, Brett Girard says you are following the Trump playbook. So, Admiral, I want you to clarify the Brett Girard and the Trump playbook business, please.
So thanks for having me on, Larry. And I think a lot of this speak is just political speak, because we both know the truth. and that is three vaccines got authorized because of the Trump administration Operation Warp Speed, probably two more. By the time we left, we had purchased 900 million doses with an option for 2 billion. We had 70,000 vaccination sites already signed up. We purchased 1 billion needles and syringes, 1 billion needles and syringes. We had 19 pharmacy chains. So look, the Biden administration are adding value to what they see. They're learning, they're building. But it's just a false narrative to say they were left with nothing. In fact, the day they took office, 1.5 million shots got into people's arms. That's because of all our planning and implementation. You know that. I think everybody knows that.
I do know it, Brett. And I'll tell you, I just needed some factoids. And I thank you for that very, very much.
I was glad they went through that last night. Steve Moore back with us. Steve-O, good morning.
Hey, Chris, good to be with you. By the way, I love what you had to say about Chris Harry. He is actually, it's a real Shakespearean tragedy, isn't it? I mean, what's happened with him. But he's the prodigal son, though. I mean, I think he will come back, and I think he will be reaccepted. And he's made a huge, huge mistake in his life. And, you know, we all do that, but this is on a monumental scale.
She's going to dump him like a bad habit. You know she will, or he will, one or the other. There's no way that lasts.
He's going to wake up one morning, and it's going to be tragic. And he's going, "Oh my God, what have I done?"
I was just imagining, like some member of my family waking up and seeing some member of my family going on national television, implicating all of us as being racists.
Right.
How devastatingly awful that would be, you know?
He's going to hate himself.
Yeah.
You know, he'll hit himself. And I was going to say, it's a good transition to what's happening today as we speak. I mean, I think that one day these Democrats will wake up and hate them. Hopefully, they'll help hate themselves for what they've done to our country. This bill is supposed to be voted on today. By the way, what's the huge rush here? I mean, we got a massive monster jobs report on Friday, which is highly inconvenient. You know they hated that jobs report, Chris. You know they hated it at the White House. And Pelosi hated it, and Schumer hated it, because it completely undermines the case for spending $1.9 trillion on top of the $1 trillion they've already have in the pipeline. This is an absurdity, folks. It is a fiscal abomination. It is going to hurt the economy way more than any help that it gives. We have a report that comes out this morning where we estimate about 5 million jobs will not be filled as a result of this bill. It's a massive expansion of the welfare state. We're paying people not to work, in some cases $100,000 to $150,000. I mean, that's not a safety net. That's a hammock. And I guarantee you, Chris, you're going to have a situation if they go forward and pass this bill, and they probably will. By the way, do you remember those scenes, Chris, you know, that you see periodically on TV of the Chinese army and their marching lockstep like robots in front of President Xi?
Right.
You know those. That's the Democratic Party today. That's the Democrats in Congress. You know, they're walking in front of Schumer and Pelosi, you know, like these Chinese soldiers, like robots.
Yes.
And they're unfortunately going to lead us right over the cliff. But it is so disgusting. I couldn't even sleep last night, Chris, because look, I don't have a problem with party unity. There are times when I'm a Republican, you know, there's times you need party unity. But don't you think there'd be just a few that might put our country over Nancy Pelosi and Schumer?
Your friend Larry last night watching his show, he said, and this is how bad it's gotten. He said, look, I'm a supply sider and I'm certainly not pro higher taxes. He said, but I find myself complimenting Joe Manchin for at least being honest enough to say, we're going to have to raise taxes to pay for what we're doing here. Like, that's how bad it's gotten. He's complimenting Manchin for at least saying we should raise taxes to pay for this.
Well, I mean, it's coming, Chris. I mean, that's the second act, right?
Yeah,
and the first act is blow the country into a fiscal oblivion and put us on the teetering on the verge of bankruptcy. And then there's going to be a massive tax hike that will be on American investors, American small businesses, American companies. You tell me, Chris, how that creates jobs. I mean, you know, you're going to my old friend Dick Armey used to say liberals love jobs, but they hate employers. I mean, you're going to have all of the stuff that we did. We've talked about this for so many months on your show. When we cut those taxes, which was a phenomenal success, we had the low. I love this. By the way, the Biden administration put out this statement yesterday saying this is going to reduce poverty and child poverty rates in the United States. I'm like, wait a minute. Under Trump, we reduced the poverty rate to the lowest level in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
We didn't do it by spending and taxing. We did it by cutting people's taxes and making. We sucked in the capital from the rest of the world, and we had so many jobs. We had 7 million surplus jobs. So you can tell I'm frustrated this morning because I think this is just a horrendous, horrendous mistake. And we will spend not years, Chris, not years. We will spend decades paying for this fiscal catastrophe.
And still to come is the attack on the energy sector. I mean, we know the Green New Deal pledge, the infrastructure pledge still to come. I mean, there is another spending proposal right behind this, right, that would...
Oh, yeah.
They want to make energy so costly, Steve, that it basically bankrupts it. I mean, is my thinking. Oil, coal, a lot of the fossil fuel.
So there were one interesting thing, Chris, is that there were about 10 or 15 amendments that were voted on over the weekend when they had what's called in the Senate Votorama, which means, you know, that any senator could bring up any amendment to the bill that they wanted. And it's just amazing some of these amendments that were voted down by Democrats. I mean, there was an amendment to allow the Keystone Pipeline to be built, you know, which affects a lot of states. I mean, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Texas. You know, it goes through all these Midwestern states. So a lot of jobs all over the spinal cord of America. And all those Democrats voted against it. You know, it was a straight party line vote. They had votes on whether or not the money should go to prisoners. You know, should we be sending $2,000 checks to people in prison? And as you know, I mean, convicts and felons are the are basically the and illegal immigrants are the heart and soul of the Democratic Party today.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that an interesting party? They hate police and love the felons.
Right.
So an amendment to make sure the money doesn't go to illegal immigrants and that the money doesn't go to felons, that amendment failed on a straight party line vote where every Democrat said, no, we want the money to go to felons and illegal immigrants. You can't make this stuff up, Chris.
Yeah, I just saw a live shot of Manhattan this morning, you know, Times Square. It was just a live shot on cable news. And it was, you know, a couple of taxis, you know, and like a couple of people walking. You know, it's 8:30 on the East Coast as we talk.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's there's no business, there's no commerce, there's no traffic, there are no people. Still, you know, a year later, you have illegals pouring over the southern border. A $1.9 trillion spending bill about to be cut. And I think, you know, I'm just doing math. You just do the math on it. A seized economy, a bunch of illegal people flowing in, kids not in school, businesses shut down, yep. Gas prices going up. Everything's trending in the wrong direction for something good to come of this, Steve, it seems to me.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, the illegal immigrants are flowing over the border now because they want to get the $2,000 check.
Yeah.
If I were a poor Mexican, I'd probably be doing the same thing.
Of course.
Even Americans are so stupid, they need to be $2,000 if I come across the border. But look, the economy, I don't want to sound like, Armageddon is coming. The economy the rest of this year is going to be great. I mean, I was quoted over the weekend saying the economy is like a rocket ship, is ready to take off because of what you just played. Operation Warp Speed means that over the next 2 or 3 months, virtually by the end of April, virtually everyone who wants a vaccine will have one. And then, you know, New York's going to look like Florida. By the way, Chris, I just got back from Florida. I was there for 4 or 5 days. I met with Ron DeSantis, who's the new superstar of the party. He's the governor of Florida. And I got to tell you, Florida is completely open for business. You got to do the compare and contrast. Look at Manhattan and then look at what's happening in Miami or Palm Beach or Fort Lauderdale or Orlando or Tampa. I mean, that state is just booming. You can't, not only restaurants and hotels and beaches and schools open, I mean, you can't even get restaurants. I mean, it's so crowded there. Everybody's pouring into Florida. It's really the tale of two America. I mean, how can you have so many, a state. By the way, here's a statistic for you, Chris. New York has a higher, a slightly lower population now than Florida because so many people have moved to Florida. Florida is like 22 million. New York is 20 million. Florida gets, I mean, New York gets twice as much money in this aid package than Florida does. And as Chris DeSantis, I mean, as Ron DeSantis told me this week, he said, Steve, we did it right. We did not lock down our economies. We did not lock down our schools. We allowed our small businesses to continue to function. Now we have an unemployment rate that's 5.1%. New York's 9.1%. New York, California's high. And we get less money even though we did it right. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's not fair.
Yeah, I mean, Wyoming just announced on the 16th they're going to open up fully. You know, it's I say the Neanderthals keep scoring victories.
The Neanderthals
keep opening.
How are we the Neanderthals?
Yeah.
I mean, the Neanderthals are Wolf and Cuomo and
Murphy.
Yeah. And, the ones who completely destroyed their economy. And by the way, they do not, folks, have lower death rates. They have higher death rates than Florida and Arizona and these states in Texas that are opened up. So, I mean, we're coming to the one-year anniversary, Chris, of lockdown. The greatest mistake in the history of the United States. If it's not the greatest mistake, it's in the top three. The cost of this to our children, to our businesses, to our workers have been multiple times greater than any benefit.
Yeah, and Fauci continues to talk like, we're getting there, just not yet. And I'm not sure, I mean, when you hear about a guy like Fauci, and, I won't even ask you to question his sincerity, but I will ask you, do you think that the guy should continue to have a seat at the table in terms of setting timelines for when economies should open and people should be able to freely mix, mingle, open their businesses?
I think Fauci is just a publicity hound. I really do. I mean, I followed him very closely, as a lot of us have. He says diametrically opposite thing one day as he says the next day. He will say, I've never seen anything like it. He's like Meghan Merkel. He will do anything to get on the front page of the newspapers, right?
Yep.
I mean, first he says, masks are good. No, they're bad. Wear them. Don't wear them. He's now saying we have to have 10,000. We can't have 10,000 people who test positive. If you're testing hundreds of thousands of people, you're going to get just from false positives 10,000. I mean, I don't understand why he has a high popularity rating. I don't understand why people put any trust in him. But it's time for him to go for sure. And I just hope, I pray, I'm still hoping out a prayer that we can get five or six Democrats in the Congress to vote against Pelosi and say, this is outrageous. We don't need it. It will bankrupt our country. This bill is the worst bill I've seen in 35 years, and we will regret it. Not for years, decades. Our children's children will be cursing us for doing this to our country.
Steve Moore is our chief economist. We talk with him each and every week. Thanks for your time, as always, my man. I appreciate it.
Okay, Chris.
Point to the successes. This was a question I asked in yesterday's show. I'll continue to ask. Where are the successes by Democrats in this pandemic? Where do you point to the successes? Sincerely, I'm asking. Telephone number 610-850-0990, because I don't see them. I mean, Trump's mean. Trump was a failure. Where are these successes in this pandemic? By Democrats, but let's just keep it here in Pennsylvania to keep things easy. Let's keep it specific to Pennsylvania. Let's keep it specific to the Southeast and Philadelphia. Where do you see the successes? I don't see them. Where are they? Where are Democrats leading and winning? And I mean, if you see evidence of it, I got a line open for you at 610-850-0990. Anybody call and make the case? Because I continue to see these stories stack up and stack up and stack up every day. Even left-wing media outlets continue to ask the question, what the hell's going on here? Series of red flags during city's Philly fighting COVID partnership detailed an inspector general's report. And yet, our mayor, not under any kind of scrutiny, our health director of Philadelphia still has a job. How's that possible? Our state director of health got a promotion.
You really can't make this up. This is really happening.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, by every objective metric, is in the bottom tier of everything. We lag in almost everything comparative to almost every state in the union. We lag in every way. And no one has paid a price for it. No Democrat that's leading has paid a price. None. And all I keep hearing is how mean Trump was. That somehow Trump's to blame. And I can't, it doesn't compute. I'm trying to understand it. Someone can help me with that? 610, I mean, it's classic deflection, of course, but I kind of wonder when the rubber meets the road and elections do come around, what's the sale? And for you Republicans, I remind you again, if you are an elected official or you are running against someone who's holding an office right now, be it school board, a commission, if you're a county commissioner, I continue to say, if litigating this pandemic is not top of your agenda, if you're running for an elected office and you're not relitigating this pandemic, something's wrong with you. You're not a serious person. You don't know what you're doing, and you need to seriously reevaluate. If you intend to run for Senate, if you intend to run for governor, if you intend to run for state rep, if you intend to run for county commissioner, township supervisor, school board, mayor, city council, if you run for any of these positions or posts, if you're even thinking about it, or if you're thinking about giving money to any of these people, or if you're thinking about getting involved or volunteering for any of these people, question number one ought to be, where do you stand on what we've just been through for the last year? I want to know the measure of the man and woman held up against this last year. I want to know where they stand on what we've been through. I want to know their position on limitless executive authority. For instance, May 18th, the question on all our ballots in Pennsylvania. Are you in favor of limiting executive authority by this governor? Endless lockdowns, endless mask edicts without legislative oversight. Are you in favor of limiting that? The answer should be yes. Every Pennsylvanian, regardless of your party affiliation, every Pennsylvanian on May 18th should say yes to both questions on their ballot. Yes, I am in favor of limiting any governor's ability to freely curtail our liberties through executive action for as long as he or she wants. That shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be allowed without legislative oversight. That matters. And every single person that's elected to an office going forward should have to explain his or herself. Do you favor limitless lockdowns of school children? Do you favor limitless lockdowns of restaurants and bars? This is the only question. This is the only question that matters. This is the only conversation that matters. And anyone not discussing this, anyone running for office not discussing this, anyone thinking about getting into politics not discussing this, on any level going forward in this next year, in the next 2 years, is not a serious person, and you should ignore them. Everyone wanting to run for office or currently holding office in Pennsylvania needs to be on trial on this issue of this pandemic. How did they act? What do they think about it? And how will they behave going forward? Or if they've never held office, what do they think about it? How would they behave were it up to them? And what do they think we should do going forward? God forbid, should we find ourselves in this situation again? Everything we talk about politically going forward should be measured through the prism of this last year. And I don't think there should be another issue to be discussed. series of red flags during city's Philly Fighting COVID partnership, detailed an inspector general's report. A series of missteps that led to the health department's messy breakup with Philly Fighting COVID. The unraveling of the city's partnership became a dark cloud over the city's COVID response in January, with the health commissioner, Dr. Farley, announcing the city was cutting ties with the organization. The report from the inspector general examines a history of problems the city encountered with the group led by a 22-year-old Drexel grad. When the relationship was terminated, Farley blamed the group for not informing the city it had created a for-profit arm, nor that it had updated its terms of service, allowing people's personal data collected on its website to be sold. Farley was also bothered by the group's abrupt discontinuation of COVID testing services that had been run in partnership with the city for months. Yeah, it's all the group's fault. And poor Thomas Farley had no knowledge of any of it. He was an innocent victim in all of it. It makes total sense that he would turn to an untested, unproven, unknown, neophyte 22-year-old Drexel grad to hand out the most valuable commodity in the midst of a 100-year pandemic. It makes total sense that the city's health director would say, "Here, kid, with no resume or track record, here's the most important thing in the gateway to our city's freedom. Here, you do it. And I'll not ask questions." And then the press at large and the voting public at large in Philadelphia all sits around and finds acceptable that the health director would say, "Well, he didn't tell me what he was up to." This is acceptable leadership from our mayor? Democrats, all. Everyone, every last one of them a Democrat. This is leadership? Our city's shut down. Meanwhile, over the Inquirer, what's the plan? Suburban Pennsylvania officials blast Department of Health over region's vaccine supply as dispute intensifies. The fight over vaccinating Philadelphia's suburban counties intensified Monday. I talked to a pastor, one of my pastors. He's of a certain age demographic where he qualifies to be part of the first vaccinated. He said a pharmacist friend of his called him, told him to get on an online portal to get signed up. And I think Maria Panaritis at the Daily News somewhat described this experience. It's like trying to get into a ticket lottery. You get in and you enter your name and you click, 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 click. Yeah, I got in. Yeah, I got in. Woo! It's like trying to buy. What are we doing? You're clicking to get in to get it, like you're trying to win an online raffle. That's not the way this is supposed to go. That's not the way this should go. And this guy happens to be somewhat computer savvy. Suffice it to say, most of our seniors are not in this country. So the idea that an octogenarian is out there clicking his or her way through a computer lottery to get a vaccine at the local pharmacy is not happening. We all understand that. And they're obviously not allowed to get near anybody to get help. The fight over vaccinating Philadelphia's suburban counties intensified Monday as southeastern Pennsylvania politicians demanded that the state send more vaccine doses and that the state health department indicate it has no plans to boost the region's share. The state has consistently doled out far smaller amounts of vaccine than requested by the four counties. The county's leader said Monday, as a backlash to a Sunday Zoom call the Department of Health held with the region's officials, The confusion worsened as the Department of Health conveyed shifting messages Monday afternoon. A health department spokesperson said in a news release suggestions that the collar counties had not received their fair share was false. But when pressed for details at a news briefing a few minutes later, the spokesperson said the state was not denying there was an undersupply. And despite a pledge by the acting secretary, Allison Beam, by the way, folks, We have dramatically improved the looks of our state health director, not for nothing. I can confirm Allison Beam is all woman.
Yeah, no more. I guess the Adams family is incomplete now.
Yeah. Cousin, it is gone. This is Marilyn from the Munsters now. She was born all woman. It's right. I wouldn't mind meeting with Allison Beam. Health Secretary Beam. Nothing was installed on her. That's all real. How do you do? Anyway, I want to be fair to her. I don't think she's been in the job 2 minutes. I don't know that. How can you lay all this on her? Anyway, it was not clear Monday whether the Department of Health even knew which counties statewide needed fixes. The state hadn't complete. And the one person who should know or would know, of course, just got a promotion. The state hasn't completed an analysis that would identify which counties are receiving less than they should under the state's allocation formula, said the spokesperson. The political fight over a public health issue affecting hundreds of thousands saw frustrations bubble over after weeks of queries about vaccine supplies, and local officials said weeks of no answers and no concrete solutions. And I read this, and I read this, and I read this, and you know a name that I just don't see? A name that I read, this just goes on and on and on and on and on. This story goes on and on in the inquiry. You know, a name that never, ever appears in this lengthy, 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 lengthy story about all the consternation here in suburban Philadelphia about leaders frustrated they're not getting enough vaccine. You know, a name that just never appears? Not once.
Who would have been in charge of distributing it?
Governor Wolf's name never appears in it. The guy who runs the whole stupid state. The whole stupid show. The executive branch leadership of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's name is not in a story about why the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania does not have a properly allocated amount of vaccines in each county. The guy who runs the Commonwealth's name is not appearing in a story about why it's not being run properly. Now, why is that? Democrats run everything and they're failing. But Trump's mean. Go ahead and call me at 610-850-0990 and tell me what a stellar job performance the Democrats have done running things, folks. Go ahead. We're still under these ridiculous lockdowns. So many school districts in Pennsylvania are still locked down. Vaccines are not being distributed properly or fast enough. While red states and Republican leaders are not only vaccinating faster, they're opening faster. And here we sit languishing. All Democrats, every last one of them. Losers, every one. And they still have the audacity to shout, Trump, but Trump, January 6th, insurrection. Spare me. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Your time's coming. Enjoy your brief respite of total control, Democrats, because you're out of blame. There's no more runway to blame anyone else. Your total inability to lead has been exposed. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. One of the more horrifying stories to come out of yesterday was Brian Stelter's reliable sources. For whatever reason, doing a lighthearted segment about the ups and downs of TV personalities working from in-home studios during the pandemic. And in this segment, he insisted that it was an embarrassing moment and a humanizing moment, showing clips of him working without pants. And he showed a photo of him working without pants, Fast Eddie. Yeah. That'll help your diet.
WNTP Philadelphia. Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. Download our free mobile app at 990theanswer.com.